Amateur radio repeater system.
Sounds with the Major on WS2N.
Thank you, Paul. Good evening. Talk to you soon. KC2WGB, clear.
Net tonight at 8 o'clock. W2VL repeater system.
K2RIW here. My name is Dick. Let's see if I can... light night. Looks like we can dedicate lots of time to
can't read my own writing. Mobile. T2IW, you got it, John.
Thank you, Dick. K2RIW and the TechNet. This is KD2FQU. Good evening, guys. Well, I actually had two questions. One was for Vanity call sign. I know it's not part of the TechNet, but my second question is, I just got my general license back in May, and I wanted to know where I would be able to check. I was speaking with the VE. Let me let it drop. I was speaking with the VE that gave the administered test that I took, and he said that I'll have to go through the SDC in order to do that, but I was getting lost off their website, the ULS database, in order to apply for Vanity.
Okay, I think I heard John say my name, although whatever you said before that, John, maybe you've got a suggestion for John number two. John number one, KC2WGV, go right ahead.
KC2WGV, yes, Dick. I believe you can do that on QRZ with no problem. You just scroll down, look up your call sign, scroll down, you'll see where it says apply for Vanity Call. I think you can do it all through there. Probably a lot easier.
Yeah, but if I understand correctly, what John number two might be asking us is what's the way that he can find out which Vanity calls are available, which calls haven't already been taken? He'd probably like to choose one with the initials of his name or something like that. Let me see if that's what the real question was. KB2FQU, K2RIW.
Thank you very much. No, I know exactly which call sign I'd like to get, and I was looking through the ULS database if it was in use, and it's available. But it was just how to apply for it. I read up on ARL's website that the fee was increased to $21.60 for the Vanity call sign renewal, and that's all I was able to come across. So, thank you very much, John, for that update QR that I haven't been to that website in a couple of months. So I'll take a look into that. Let me let it drop. My second question is for the one meter quarter band. I have a Yaesu VX6. And the antenna that came with it, I was reading up, was poorly rated. I was just wanted to know what aftermarket antennas would be greatly suggested as a tri-band for 2 meter, 220 and 440.
I'm guessing the tri-band antenna you're talking about is going to be house-mounted as opposed to mag-mounted on a car. So this is a fixed location antenna that you're looking for. John, go ahead.
It's a rubber duck. It just mounts off of the handset.
Diamond, Dick.
Yeah, it's a very brief message. John, number one, Diamond. Alrighty. Tell us, You know that Diamond makes a rubber duck that is a tri-bander, so give us a couple words on that. You sure it covers all three bands? Any idea what price, what kind of performance is claimed? KC2WGB, K2LIW.
KC2WGB, I believe I saw it on AES. It was around $35, I think. It was a tri-band. They also have dual bands. And of course, model bands, but it was available last time I looked.
Now, when somebody said that the antenna supplied with the piece of equipment with your Yaesu VX6 is low in performance, there's many ways of guy may have been X number of miles away from a repeater that has 220 capability. He thought he'd have good coverage. He had poor coverage, and he blames it on the rubber duck. For a rubber duck to have low performance, let's talk about that. The rubber duck in general is going to be somewhere between, if it's a super long one, 5/8 wave, half wave, quarter wave, it's in that vicinity. All of those antennas fall within 1.5 or 2 dB of difference in gain as far as antenna pattern is concerned. When you've got a handy talkie in your hand, the counterpoise for that is the metal box that's inside the plastic covering that you're holding onto, plus the capacitive coupling between your hand, your arm, and the rest of your body. That's the counterpoise. Let me drop. So if you get low performance, the only way the antenna itself could have low performance, because it has no ability to create an antenna pattern. It can't squirt the energy in the wrong direction, if you know what I mean. It doesn't have enough real estate to do that. The only real way a rubber duck-like antenna can be low in performance is that it presents such a high standing wave ratio that the rig doesn't put out much power on that frequency. That's possible. There's ways of testing that, whether it's the VISWR or the antenna. And the only other way I know of is that if they wound it out as a coil out of nichrome wire, and it's acting like a great big load resistor. Well, in that particular case, you'd know real fast by way of heat. You run the thing key down for 60 seconds, so to speak, and if it's dissipating energy because it's got I squared R loss, resistive loss, you're going to feel the heat. Almost no rubber duck nowadays would fall into that category. Way back in the very beginning, they made rubber ducks out of resistive materials because that's the only way they could get a good antenna match, because they hadn't done a good job on the design of the antenna itself. In the very early days of rubber ducks, some of that took place. The ham started making measurements, started finding out what's going on, started complaining, and so that can't happen anymore, so to speak. Let me drop. So does the rubber duck supplied with the ACUVX6 really have low performance? Somebody may have made that declaration. Did he make that measurement with laboratory test equipment that's traceable, that's calibrated? It's very hard for a rubber duck to have low performance. Low performance compared to what? Another high-performance rubber duck? And yes, if you've got a high-performance rubber duck, one that's super long, 5/8 wave, because its center of radiation is a little bit higher off the ground, and altitude makes a big difference on VHF, UHF frequencies, but that could give you a little bit more performance. But are you going to get more gain out of it? Not much. Are you going to get lower VISWR? Maybe. So, and if it was because of standing wave ratio on the original rubber duck, does that mean the antenna was a little bit too long or a little bit too short? In which case, if it was a little bit too short, to add a top hat capacitor, to add a piece of copper tape to the tip of the rubber duck would correct that, if you know what I mean. So I'm not so sure you should give up on the rubber duck supplied with the rig without some further testing. Go ahead and buy the diamond antenna and compare the two. But it's very difficult for a rubber duck nowadays to have low performance from the data I just given you, so to speak, John. KB2, I think it's KB2. Doctor, Quebec Uniform, K2RIW, you got it, John.
Totally. Thank you very much, Dick. KD2FQU, K2RIW. The receiver only pushes one and a half watts on 220, and I wasn't able to key up the N2ROW repeater, which is close to where I live. I had to use an external mount, mag mount, not even cut for the 220 band in order to hit it. And I don't know exactly how close I am to it from where I was trying to transmit from. But even from where I live, I was able to key it up. Of course, SWR would be horrendous because it's not the correct cut. Mag mount antenna. But that's just my experience.
KD2, CXK with a comment.
CXK, say. I should know you. Let's start with your name and go right ahead with your comment. Mr. CXK, go right ahead.
Hello, from taking that guy out, John?
Yeah, we're hearing CXK very well, so go right ahead.
Okay, this antenna that comes on the VX6 is almost identical to the one from the VX5 and the VX8DR. I have the VX5 and the VX8DR, I've had the VX6 radio. This is a triple band antenna. They give you a 6-meter resonator to attach to the top of that antenna, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm going to assume that's correct. I've actually taken these antennas, I kind of hoard them. I've taken these antennas, I've put them on MFJ SWR analyzers, and to my surprise, they resonate almost 1-to-1 SWR in the center of all three bands. Now, they are a little high on 2 meters with the 6-meter resonator, just a tad over. When you screw on a little stubby attachment, it brings it down to almost, you know, negligible readings. So I would say this is a pretty high-performing antenna. I've not been able to find another antenna, with the exception of the Diamond, that performs as well as this as far as from an SWR point of view. Let me let it drop. From what I understand, one of the reasons that 220 was so limited on all of these radios is, of course, there's a lot more going on inside the radio, but I think a lot of that is due because they couldn't get the antenna to resonate on 4 bands like that. So they throttled back the radio as not to feed too much power back into the unit because of the high SWR in the 220. They do market most of these radios as triple band radios. My VX8DR is sold as a triple band radio, even though it transmits on 4 bands. So that may be one answer you're looking for. Just some input. KD2CXK, back to net.
Good information, Craig. Thank you. So, run that by one more time. If it's a triple band radio, which I'm guessing the triple band is 2 meters, 220, and 440, I'm a little bit curious as to why there is something you add for 6 meters, if 6 meters is not one of the things that it covers. By the way, the number of 6-meter handy-talkies in the world, I think, is very small. So I may have misunderstood some of that, Craig, so run it by again. KD2CXK, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, Dick. The ASU manufactures the VX line of radios as triple band radios covering 2 meters, 0.70 centimeters, and 6 meters. 220 is kind of like a little bonus they throw you. And the output on 220 varies considerably from model radio to radio. I do know that the VX5 and the VX6 and the VX7 do put out over 1 watt on 220, I think 1.25 watts on 220. However, the VX8 and VX8DR put out less than 1 watt on those bands. A lot to do with what's going on in the radio, more than the antenna there. But, yes, you do add a resonator section to the end of the stock whip, the stock rubber duck antenna, for 6-meter use. It's almost a miniaturized version of the antenna that comes on the 817 series. In fact, it's almost a scaled-down copy perfectly. The resonators are interchangeable between the two antennas, however, they look a little weird. KD2CXK, back to net.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. Although it's a long shot, quite possibly what John didn't do was to put on that extra tip to the antenna for 6 meters when he's on 220. It's worth a try. Extra length couldn't hurt. And when the mag mount antenna seems to work pretty well on 220 with that radio to the local repeater, I think he called it the into ROW repeater, because that's a different location with a different ground plane, it's kind of hard to judge. When you change antenna location and type of antenna, and you try to make a judgment, that you're changing a number of variables simultaneously. When that repeater is up and running, and you're using the handy talkie with its rubber duck to listen, and you walk around the room and you hold the handy talkie horizontally, vertically, pointed away from you, pointed toward you, high, low, and whatever, you may find that there are specific locations where you're going to get better coverage. When I listen to this particular repeater with a handy talkie in the morning, I have to I have to mount it horizontally on a plastic shelf in my bathroom. That's where I get the best reception on this 2-meter repeater. I'm 19 miles away from this repeater, but I'm on a high piece of land, and it's a purely vertically polarized repeater. But by the time that signal gets to me, it bounces off of all kinds of things, including the local water tower, and the strongest signal I get is horizontally polarized in that location in my bathroom. There's a whole lot of experiments along those lines you could do, John. KD2, Foxtrot Quebec Uniform, KQLIW in the TechNet.
Maybe you want to acquire some more info on that radio?
Yes, stay by a minute, John. Mr. IFY, I think it is. Give us your full call and your name and your information, KQLIW.
Hello, Bravo 1, India Foxtrot Yankee Bill from Stanford. I own the VX5 and the VX6. The VX5 was a tri-bander, 6-meter, 2-meter, 440. The VX6 was 2-meter, 220, and 440. Kenwood makes a THF6 with 220 in it. That puts out a full 5 watts on 220. That's also 2-meter, 440, and 220. And as far as the N2ROW system, those repeaters all used to be linked together at one point. I'm not sure if they still are or not. But he used to have a 6-meter, a 2-meter. I think he even had a 900 that was linked with a bunch of 2-meter and 440 repeaters to it. I can't be one IFY back to that.
Thank you, Bill. Some more good information. So we're slowly zeroing in on your situation, John. And so is that rubber duck really low in performance? Is it presenting a reasonable VISWA? If we understand correctly, your particular rig, the VX6, covers 2, 220, and 440. It doesn't cover 6 meters, so you don't, most likely they didn't ship you that extra tip to be added to the rubber duck itself. Hope some of this is helpful. KD2, FQU, Mobile, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Thank you very much, KD2, FQU, TechNet. No, the rubber duck didn't have any attachments on it. I was looking into the VX8DR antenna, and the VX8 is a quad bander from what I've read online. Of course, two different models, the European and the U.S. version. But with that in mind, I am looking to find where I can purchase the rubber duck for that model. I was able to check HRO's website, but on their website, it was a question mark to whether or not it was in stock at any of their locations across the U.S. And I generally order from the Delaware location, because it's pretty much overnight. Once they ship it out, get it the next day.
Yeah, according to John, number one, you should also consider the Diamond antenna. KC2WGB, are you fairly sure, John, that the rubber duck made by Diamond is claimed to be a good match as far as the kind of connector, frequencies, VISWA, and whatever, for a VX6 Yaesu? KC2WGB, K2LIW.
KC2WGB. The specific model, I'm not sure, but I know I have had reports of the tri-band working very well with many of the HKs. Model numbers, I don't know. And by the way, Dick, try to leave a little bit of pause for the echo link stations.
Comment one more time, Dick?
Yeah, that sounds like Craig. Go ahead, Craig.
Yes, with the question of the VX5 and the VX6 not working on 6 meters is false. The European and Asian versions of the radio do work on 6 meters. The modification is a solder ball under underneath the plastic cover underneath the battery in both radios. So by adjusting that solder ball on the VX5 and VX6, you do get 1.5 watts on the entire 6-meter band. KD2, CXK, back to net.
That's another good thing to know about, Craig. Where did you find that out? Are there websites describing that modification procedure? Over to you, Craig.
Yeah, there are plenty of them on YouTube videos as well. Yaesu does that with almost all their HTs and even some of the business radios. I guess it's a cost reduction feature by only having to make one main logic board for the radio for different markets, and then they just adjust the programming, so to speak, with the soldering of these little jumpers, which are kind of tiny underneath this black plastic cover that they have in most of their HTs. So there are many things out there. In fact, most of these radios can be free-banded in the receive mode this way as well, and some extended to the airband and so forth, but those are things you do at your own risk. KD2, CXK, back to that.
So by way of searching on the internet, sounds like there's quite a bit of information on that radio, and interesting that they made it essentially one radio, and put jumpers in certain places depending on which portion of the world they're milling it to. Craig, why in the world would they not allow it to work on 6 meters to people who are buying it in the United States? There's a little bit of a mystery on that one. Maybe you got an answer on that one. KD2 CXK, K2LIW.
Only the great and wise people at Yaesu can answer that question. And anybody who's been a Yaesu fan, as I'm a Yaesu fan, most of my radios are Yaesu. I think I only have one or two ICOM units. These are the radios that I use day to day. Are used to settling with some of the idiosyncrasies that they pump out into the market. The VX8 has its quirks with the low audio output and unified volume and VFO knob that requires a trigger that nobody likes. So, I mean, they don't, you know, there's only so much sense that goes into these radios. The people who design them, I don't think, interrogate too much of the customer based on what they're looking for. But the thing with the solder balls is definitely a marketing issue. I do know that. I do not know why that they don't come pre-rigged for 6 meters in a market that is able to use that band. But it's not something that you have to go crazy to modify the radio to do. It's usually very straightforward. There's almost zero chance of you bricking the radio should you do it correctly. You just got to be good with a fine tip soldering iron and some solder, and I think the job for the most part would take the fraction over 3 minutes. Back to net.
Is the main part of that operation that you're now describing removing a solder ball and or a jumper, in which case a person using a solder sucker or solder wick could do that with a little bit of skill, could do that a heck of a lot easier when removing a large amount of solder from something. That solder wick, to me, works very well. Do you think it would work in this case, Craig? Back to you, Craig.
Negative. It's kind of tight in there. I wouldn't want to stick some extra copper webbing down in there. I would probably definitely opt for a sucker there, especially if you have a unified desoldering station or a desoldering iron, one that is equipped with the vacuum ball on the unit itself. You can get a fine enough point. I mean, you're dealing with a surface-mounted device confinement area. You definitely don't want to stray too far from where you're aiming. And I'm looking up the modification website for you right now, so I guess I'll get that on the next go-around. KD2CXK, back to that.
Yeah, now I'm getting the impression of very close pin spacings, like a surface mount device or a small integrated circuit. So if at all possible, it'd be nice to do this under a microscope so you can see what you're doing with a very fine tip soldering iron. Looks like a little bit of a watchmaker skill is required to do it right. So some more information is on the way to you, John, as to the website that's going to tell you how to make these modifications. But that's if I understand correctly, that's to get you on 6 meters, which was not your original question, but what the heck. If you get one more band out of your rig, I think it's worth it. By way of Diamond and the other antennas and antenna experiments, I think you're going to do well. But as you can tell, I'm a little bit skeptical that you can generate nowadays a rubber duck that's low in performance. As long as it gives a slightly acceptable standing wave ratio, it has no choice but to send out that signal, if you know what I mean. Other than getting hot because it's got resistor materials in there. And nobody nowadays would do that because some hand's going to discover it and give them a whole lot of flack. KD2, FQU, K2LAW in the TechNet. You got it, John.
Thank you very much, KD2FQU. That's a heap of knowledge right there. I have heard of the Mars Cap Mars, the AQHD, and I was curious to what would be the output, how much output it would do when it's not, of course, manufactured for that band. But with 1.5 watts, what would I be able to access? I live in the middle of Brooklyn, and I can barely pick up anything unless I'm using my rig. I have an 857D inside of my car.
I'm doing a quick calculation right now. I'll be back with you in a second.
Dick, that's great, KD2CXK. I'm going to jump right in and use this time. It is evidently a diode you have to either destroy or remove. Most people opt to crush it with a pair of needle-nose pliers. This pretty much freebands the radio. Mars, Cap, MERS, everything, GMRS, FRS, and 6 meters. So it's out there. It's all over the net. All you have to do is Google VX6, 6 meter mod, or MERS mod, or something. It all comes up. KD2CX, hey, back to net.
That's good to know, Greg. Be careful of something else that you can easily fall into a trap on this one, John, and that is, yeah, assuming the rig does really put out 1.5 watts like they claim, and a modern-day potent handy-talkie puts out 5 watts. If I compare 1.5 watts to 5 watts, we're talking about, 3.5 to 1 power ratio, which sounds like a lot. And if you were a naive person, you'd say, gee, I'm putting out less than one-third the power. I'll probably have less than one-third the range. It doesn't work that way. It really works by decibels. The 5 watts versus 1.5 watts is a 5-decibel difference, less than 1 S unit. In almost any apartment in New York City, you walk around, in almost any location, you walk around with a handy-talkie, where you try, you hold it high, low, left, right, point it up, down, away from you, and so on, horizontal, vertical polarization, you can easily make 20 decibels of difference in signal strength on either transmitting or receiving by just changing polarization and location. So when you make a 5 decibel decrease, because you've gone down from 5 watts, let me drop. You've gone down from 5 watts to 1.5 watts. Made a 5-decibel change. And why? Just by positioning the radio in different ways, you can make a 20-decibel difference. If you now calculate the probability, the number of places in your apartment where you can hold the thing, where you're going to get good reception with 5 watts versus good reception with 1.5 watts, we may be talking about a 20% difference in the number of good locations versus bad locations. So don't let the 1.5 watts confuse you. There are a number of guys who live within 5 miles or so of a repeater, and they've got one of these really super small handy-talkies. Then the low-power mode puts out a tenth of a watt, 100 milliwatts, and they talk beautifully. And if you compare it to 100 milliwatts compared to 5 watts, that's a 50-to-1 power ratio. Well, 50-to-1 power ratio is really only 17 dB. That's a little bit more than 2 S units, if you know what I mean. So range that you get on a handy-talkie versus power output moves in a kind of a funny way, and not at all linear, as you can tell. So don't give up just because you think it's low in power. KD2, FQU for any other questions. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thank you very much, Dick. KD2FQU. I have noticed that, of course, walking around, I've listened to the Limar repeater, 2 meter in the morning, sometimes on my HT or in the evening in order to continue listening to the TechNet up until the mailbag, and past that when some other guy is chatting. I live on the ground floor of a very tall building in my area, but as you would say, elevation, or altitude, plus the antenna, I would have to look into then getting the VX-ADR antenna. Most likely would be the best place to look for is contacting me to see if I can purchase that.
Okay, so to purchase that Yaesu VX-8 antenna, anybody got a suggestion as to where Craig should go, Gretchen, where John should go to purchase that?
Yeah, Dick, it's Craig. I'll jump right in. Let me see if I have it.
You've got it, Craig. Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of buy all mine on America's Favorite Auction site. You can fill in the four letters. I did locate the modification instructions. It's a little more intricate. It is a solder ball. There are some key combinations to press, and you can find that on QRZ.net and Google, and put in the forums, 6 meters on a VX6R. And November 3, Alpha Tango Sierra has all the instructions. KD2CXA back to that.
So November 3, Alpha Sierra Tango has all that data. We get there by way of QRZ.net. Sounds good. Need any fill for any of this, John? KD2FQU, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Actually, that answers all my questions, even with the 2 meter, the 220 use. Definitely looking forward into getting that antenna. So thank you very much, for the knowledge, pool of knowledge. Thank you very much, Greg, and everybody else. It's KD2FQ, back to net.
And John, as you make all these modifications, some of which are going to work and some of which maybe are not going to work at first, come back and let us know what you find. For all we know, there's a number of guys out there with that VX6, VX5, VX8, VX7. And so there may be other people who would like to know what you've discovered. We're now going to go over to Nick into Hotel Victor. Boy, I can't read my own writing here tonight. I think it's Hotel Victor Kilo. But you know who you are, Nick. Go right ahead, K2RIW.
It's HVR, Dick.
November 2, Hotel Victor Romeo. Go right ahead, Nick. When he checked in earlier, he sounded like he was getting to us by EchoLink. And you're monitoring EchoLink. I wonder if you saw him sign in, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
It's correct, Dick, and he's still listed on there, so maybe he stepped away for a minute.
Echo link to transmit. Do you have a copy on me?
We have copy on you, Nick, so go right ahead.
All right. I have a Yaesu 857D. I operate like HF mobile from the car, and I'm using the ATAS automatic tuning antenna. I've had it for a while, and it works great. I operate down to 40 meters. The thing is, you know, I have a ground wire on the base of the antenna, the ATAS, so I'm able to tune to 40 meters. Although the radio will tune to 80 and 60 meters, that antenna won't tune down any further than 40. I was wondering if anybody's out there who knows if there's a way to get that antenna to tune. I'd like to work 80 meters on it, but I don't know if it's possible, considering the antenna may not be able to tune that well. Is there a way of modifying it so it will tune to 80, or anybody have any recommendations on an antenna that will work with the Yaesu 857D for a mobile application to work down to 80 meters? Back to that. This is N2H3R.
Yeah, 80 meters from a mobile is quite a challenge. I mean, we're talking about 250-foot wavelength, so to speak. And you're trying to squeeze that into an antenna on a car. The screwdriver-like antenna, I think, goes there. It takes a pretty good-sized loading coil. So we're going to pass it over to the net for people with a suggestion on what they've done to get reasonable mobile performance out of an 80-meter antenna. The exact rig you feed it with is not as important from my point of view. Yeah, some rigs have got a wider range to their automatic antenna tuner, which means they can tolerate more of a mismatch at the antenna. But for you guys who have operated 80 meters from a mobile, what did you use? Was it homebrew? Was it commercially made? Was it a screwdriver? So give us your experience on 80 meter mobile antennas. K2L, I'd be listening for call letters.
K82FGU with a comment.
John number one, John number two recognized, and let me see if there's anyone else. Yeah, you're a mobile man from way back, John, so have you operated 80 meters mobile? And what you use, KD2FQU, mobile, K2LAW on the TechNet.
Thanks very much, Dave. The KD2FQU. I actually did see that there was a well, I was just reading up on it a couple months ago. I wanted to use 80 meters, the ATOS 120. I have the same setup, same rig. And what I saw was that somebody was able to make it somehow of a coil at the base for the ATOS, but it was in Polish. Then another antenna that they can look into is maybe the Tar Heel for mobile use.
Okay, so you did find an article of a guy who put a coil on the bottom of it. I think you said it was in Polish. I wonder where you found that one. And give us a few more words on Tar Heel. I've heard the word Tar Heel. Sounds like it's a popular antenna. Sounds like it's a partial homebrew. Well, maybe it's not. So give us some more words on both of those, John. KD2FQU, K2LAW in the TechNet.
The Tar Heel is a screwdriver antenna. I believe it. You can find it on American AESM and HRO. It claims to go on 80 meter. But I haven't tried it out yet. I haven't purchased it. Believe somebody I do know has it, the little Tar Heel, but I haven't asked them if they've used the 80 meter side of it yet.
I think you said you found an article in Polish which tells you how to put a loading coil on the antenna. Run that one by again. Where'd you find that one?
2CH.
I wish I remember the exact call sign that had it, but it was in Polish. The guy had a picture of his ATOS mounted on his truck on the front bumper with a little coil, but it didn't explain how to manufacture it for homebrew use. Actually, it did. If I recall correctly, it did have a picture diagram for what was necessary. But if he types in, if he does a Google search for an 80 meter with the ATOS, I'm pretty sure he'll be able to come across something.
Okay, so there's a guy who solved the problem, and you may have to get a Polish translation. There's a lot of ways of solving this one. if you've got a friend with a antenna analyzer, something that can really measure what is the impedance of an antenna, let's see now, a number of these handheld devices you can buy, MFJ I think makes a kind of an antenna analyzer, where if you've got a very short amount of cable between your antenna analyzer and the antenna, you're measuring the impedance directly, or if you're smart enough to make sure that the cable between the antenna and your analyzer is a multiple of a half wavelength, including the velocity factor, then the magic about a half wavelength of cable is whatever impedance you put at the far end gets repeated at the input end. Let me drop that one again. Yeah, what's really crazy about transmission lines, everybody believes, a lot of people believe, that you put a short and open, a high impedance or low impedance at one end of the cable, at the other end of the cable, that's what you're going to measure. Not necessarily true. If the cable is an odd number of quarter wavelengths long, it does impedance inverting. You put a short at the far end, and at the near end, you'll measure an open, and vice versa. If it's a quarter wavelength long, if it's a half wavelength long, no matter what you put at the far end, is exactly what you're going to measure at the near end. So once you get past that minor problem, and if you're really good with mathematics, and you know the length of the cable, you can actually do a complete correction, but I won't go there right now. So once you know that your particular 80-meter antenna is, let me pick a number, a 2,000-ohm capacitive reactance at 80 meters, and you know if you put a coil in there that's got a inductance that's got a reactance of 2,000 ohms, that's some number of microhenry, and by way of the amateur radio handbook, on the early chapters, there's a formula in there where X number of turns of X diameter is going to give you X number of microhenry. You plug in the numbers to that formula, and you know how to wind that coil. And you can wind it on PVC tubing or whatever. So you could do the scientific experiment. Let me drop. You do the scientific experiment of measuring the impedance of your antenna. Then you, in order to correct that, to make it a pure 50-ohm resistor, the Berkeley program will tell you that one. If you Google the word impedance match plus Berkeley, you'll find a beautiful program by the Berkeley College where you plug in the impedance of your antenna, you plug in the impedance of your transmitter, you plug in the frequency, and you press go, and it gives you 16 solutions of LC network and pure L network and pure C network and pi L and so on. Choose the one that you like. It'll give you 16 solutions. So then, for you to wind that coil and add it yourself is a possible approach. So, there's more than one way of doing this one. I think I heard somebody with the call letters blank, number 2, Charlie Hotel, something 2, CH. We missed the beginning of what you said, and maybe you got information to add to this one. So go right ahead, sir. Blank 2, CH, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KD2FQU with a comment.
WCH Whiskey 2 Charlie Hotel.
Okay, I've heard John, but let's hear Whiskey 2 Charlie Hotel. Go right ahead with your information, sir. Please start up with your name.
His name is William White Plain. I had also with the A2FTA 56. I tried the ATAS 120S or whatever it was, didn't work out for me. I tried the Diamond and used the SD350 to 75 meters, 50 meters, gray light. Not this year, but last year and other times, worked out 70. W, but 75 meters to 6 meters. Two whips with it. As I had one ground strap, and it didn't work well on the trunk of the stick. But that was W2CH.
Whiskey 2, Charlie Hotel, K2RIW. By the way, you got a very nice a set of photographs there when I go to your call letters at QRZ.com. Unfortunately, your signal came in kind of weak tonight, Ray, and you were only there 50% of the time. So we were essentially getting every other word. I know you're giving us some valuable information, but unfortunately it wasn't coming through because of the strength of your signal. White Plains, I guess, is not an easy area to get into this particular repeater. So anything you can do to give the machine a little bit more signal, I'm going to come back to you after I go to John. I'm going to come back to you and ask you to repeat what you gave us. KD2FQU, K2LIW, go ahead, John.
Thank you very much, Dick. KD2FQU, K2RIW with TechNet. The website, I just pulled it up. It's the exact same image that I caught before. It's Victor Echo 7 India Sugar Victor.com / link. And it has a diagram for the how he made it and a picture of the coil underneath the ATOS on front of the truck he had.
Okay, that sounds like the direct solution with all the how-to. So I wonder if Nick needs a fill on that. November 2, Hotel Victor Romeo. HV is H-U-U, H-U-R, H-V-U, right? Hotel Victor Romeo, K2RIW. Go ahead, Nick.